This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am coming in for a little bit tomorrow. No problems. Everything's fine. We just had Memorial Day weekend, and I had a lovely day writing all day on Monday. But since I took off on Monday, then I'm going to go ahead and come in on Friday to make up that time, because at this point I am trying to keep to a fairly rigid schedule of billing 34 hours every week, because that means I'll have a couple of extra weeks. One of them was at the beginning of May, and another one is going to be at the end of July. I have a couple of extra weeks in there because of the way things fall, that I'll actually be able to save up a little money for our 25th wedding anniversary, yay, which is coming up in September. So gonna come in for a little while. I'm actually going to probably try to get into work like at 6:30, so I can work from 6:30 to 2:30. And then take off and get back home because the carpet cleaners are coming. And so we've had kind of an interesting week at the house, because while I did do some writing on Monday, I also needed to get ready for the carpet cleaners because that was the only chance I was going to have to do it. And my son-in-law was going to be able to come down and get me some help. And my phone is ringing at the moment. Let me see who it is. I do not recognize them. Just a second. I'll be right back with you. Okay, I'm back. And it's actually been, 12 minutes I've been on the phone. So I finally just pulled off to the road because I thought if I don't stop, I'm going to be home and then there will be no podcast. Anyways, that was Angie's List. Angie'sList.com. Very interesting. I don't know if you recall, but several weeks ago, I was talking about the new economy and how we as users give... It's starting to rain here, by the way, which is what that sound is. How we as users give people information for free, how the websites trick us into giving them information for free. And ever since then, I have not filled out forms or reviews or anything on anybody. And so I had used a remodeler that I found them on Angie's List to put in some windows. And they did a good job. They were priced a little high, and I felt like that they weren't as communicative as they could be in terms of schedule. Because when I talked to the remodeler, he was like, oh yeah, and we need to make sure that we can get our order in next Thursday. And the impression he left was that this was just going to go bangity bang bang bang. So, but it was more, hurry up, you sure you want to order? And then when I ordered, weeks went by, and I didn't hear from them. And after about, 6 weeks going by and didn't hear boo from them, I finally called up and, let's see where you are in the stack here. Well, it usually takes us about 6 to 8 weeks to get to you. And I'm thinking, okay, you never told me that. Anyways, but once they did get there, they did a great job. You know, ta-da. They were a little expensive, but they did a great job. So anyways, I've been getting pinged from Angie's List all this time to go out and fill out a survey. And I haven't done it because I had this, you know, this thing that I had read about us giving for free our information, so I just hadn't done it. That was Angie's List. They were calling people to build out their reviews because they were watching from this area, apparently, people searching, and there weren't that many reviews. And so they wanted to get more reviews, so they actually had people doing cold calling to see if they could get... That's very interesting. to me. Very interesting. Anyways, so sorry for the interruption, but that's very interesting. The lengths that somebody's like an Angie's List will go to get enough reviews to achieve critical mass. You know, fun little tidbit. Anyways, as far as this week's gone, I was telling you that I had moved all the furniture onto our hard tile surfaces and our linoleum and stuff to get it out of the carpet, so I have a little bit of work to do tonight to get that done. Oh, rats, and I need some gasoline, too. Oh, rats. I'm going to have to turn around and go get some gas. Rats! Okay. Yeah, I should do that. Anyways, this isn't a very well planned out day. I could just tell you that right now. So, yeah, I really should go do that. So there's going to be another interruption in this podcast, and it may end up being correct lengths here. I'm just looking for a turnoff at this point. I should be able to do it here. So, anyways, been getting ready for, I have a little bit more ready to do, getting ready for the carpet stuff. I might actually run out of things to talk about today because my topic isn't that long. But I can always come up with something to joke about. So, also, today is, I of course am working on Farforth Fables 3 now, which is the third book in this whole series of Amanda and the Sleaberry Tree. And the books are out to the beta readers. I sent them out last weekend, and I had one response from one beta reader that she had already finished the book. She was one of my new beta readers. And said she really enjoyed it. And she had asked me originally, do you think my 9-year-old daughter could read it? And I always am hesitant to answer those kind of questions. And I kind of paused, and she said, well, I thought this was a children's book. And I said, well, it is a children's book. I said, how squeamish is she? And so we talked a little bit. She said, no, I think she'd be fine. I said, well, why don't you read it first? And she said, okay, I'll do that. So I asked her later, I said, so do you think it's okay for your daughter? And she said, oh, yeah, absolutely. She said, it's great. So got some nice positive feedback from that, and the positive feedback is starting to trickle in, and so that's always nice, you know, because you sit in your room and you write something, and you just have no idea how people are going to react to it. I did have an interesting experience with that writing this week, because I'm starting the next book now, Farforth Fables 3, which is Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp. And I did the Fable Thus Far chapter, which is pretty easy, of course, because you're just recapping. So I plowed through a lot of words on, I think, Saturday on that. Maybe it was Friday. Plowed through a lot of words on that. And then Saturday I had some things come up, so I only had a couple hours to write, but I think I got into chapter one on Saturday, and then I wrote a little bit on chapter one on Sunday, and I think got chapter one finished up. Maybe I got it finished up Monday night. Anyways, so Tuesday I had some interruptions, and so I didn't get much time, but I got like one line down at the beginning of chapter two. And then I was getting slowed down. And so I woke up Wednesday morning trying to kind of get my head around where I was going, what was supposed to happen in chapter two. And I was struggling a little bit. I was just kind of struggling. And one of the things that was, I think, causing me to struggle a little bit is that in the first two books, they had a pretty set formula. And, you know, that formula was working pretty well Wow, looks like a lot of people are trying to decide whether to come or go here from the gas station. That formula was working pretty well. And what I had done when I started the second book is I had actually gone through the first book and I had kind of made mental notes over all the things that I felt worked well in the first book. And when I wrote the second book, I didn't just, I didn't just borrow the words and stuff, but the settings of all those things that I thought worked well, I just went in and did more of them. So, I was like, oh yeah, that interaction was fun, and so I just did more of it. And so that made it kind of easy just to kind of match in and take care of that stuff. Okay, I'm at the gas station. I'm going to have to pause again. I'll be right back. Okay, so got my gas since I'm going in early in the morning. Didn't want to have to do that then. And anyway, so I was working on the second chapter. I had one line and I got nothing. I'm looking thinking, okay, where are we supposed to go now? And I thought, oh, well, I could possibly go here and I could possibly go there, but it just wasn't clicking. And so I went to work on Wednesday, still thinking about this, just kind of running in the back of my head. And as I was getting ready for work Wednesday morning, I had this little whisper. And the whisper was, you're struggling. Basically, the whisper was, you don't know what control means yet. And I thought, oh, that's true. If you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you'll know that I've said that the Farforth Fable series, at least these first three books, are about the three temptations that we face in our lives, which mimic the temptations of Christ. It's about convenience, certainty, and control. So convenience, if you're hungry, why don't you just turn these stones into bread and eat? That's convenience. Certainty, if you are the Son of Man, why don't you throw yourself off the top of the temple? Because God said that He'll bear you up in their arms, so why don't you prove it to yourself? And the last one is control. If you'll just bow down, I will give you all these armies. So I pretty much had a handle on certainty or on convenience in the first book, and I put in a lot of pictures about convenience, although I didn't really know I was doing that at the time, which was pretty interesting. And then certainly in the second book, with certainty, I have several scenes in there where I'm visiting this idea of certainty and uncertainty, and how do we deal with that in our lives. But in order for me to really write this, of course, I have to come up with a definition of control. What do I mean by control? And what the definition, as more I thought about it, what the definition came down to is that my quest, my epics, my adventures are those things that only I can do. Many, many, many months ago, I did a podcast about I mentioned a podcast in one of the podcasts about a woman who had really gotten a burden for the children of Africa, I think it was. And so she went over and she started an orphanage and she was living with these kids and loving them. And then it got to be too big. And so then she, has to start another orphanage. And so now she has to spend her time walking around, raising money and going and administrating all this stuff. And I noted at the time that I'm not sure, maybe that's really what she wanted to do with her life, to be the person who's a fundraiser and going around and asking for money all the time. But I suspect that there was a great deal of satisfaction that she had being on the ground with the children. And by expanding then, by stretching out her vision, by thinking that her vision was more than impacting those dozen kids or 20 kids or whatever she started out with, by thinking, look how much more I can do if I can control others, if I can control properties, if I can spread out. That then takes you away from your primary service. And so control in this context, in this book, is really going to be about when there are things that you can do for yourself and you instead start looking around and start planning for how can other people do these for me? And when you could be satisfied with what you have, and instead of being satisfied with that, you're looking out to say, okay, well, how can I multiply what I have? And how can I get more? And how can I hire minions to go out and do this for me? That when I'm talking about control, that's what I'm going to talk about. That process, and how that whenever you start adding minions to your life, whenever you start stretching yourself out and mechanizing things so that you can do more and you can be multiplied, that comes with its own cost. And that takes from you something. It's not free. It's like my work that I do as a consultant. I certainly have saved the businesses that I've worked for. I've saved them time, manpower, money. They've recompensed me for that. But by the same token, all those mechanized systems don't run forever on their own, and they have to be monitored. And what that does is the more of these systems that I've actually written that are running in the background, the more things there are that potentially can go wrong, and the more things there are that when I'm going in to visit my major client, I'm checking on. Now, I have it set up to where I can check very quickly, and I can get resolved very quickly whether something's wrong. But there is a certain drag on me that all of those systems inflict. And so once I had that idea of control, what that meant, it was amazing. Once I had that information, then all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, I need to structure it this way, and I need to structure that, and I need to do this, and I need to handle that, and you know, and I can say this about that. And so it feels like things are starting to roll now with the book. And the ideas are starting to come in. And while I am going to be using slightly altered themes and slightly altered gimmicks, we'll say, for want of a better word, settings, those kind of things, it's still very much within the genre of the other two books. And so I think it's going to be fine. It's just going to be different, where people are used to the books being a certain thing set in a small village. I always knew this coming one wasn't going to be that, so it's fine. Anyways, that's not actually what I was going to talk about today. Believe it or not, I was actually going to talk about the Pope today. Because the Pope said some fun things in one of his messages, and then the Roman Catholic Church had to follow it on and go, wait, that's not really what he meant, but I thought this was fun. And the name, I think the name of the article was Even Atheist. No, I don't, that wasn't the name of the article. But the gist of it was that even atheists are redeemed. And I think I have the quotes, the real live quotes, from the Pope. At least they were indicated on the article that this is actually what the Pope said, because of course people jump to conclusions. But let me just read you some of these things. So Pope Francis delivers his homily, and he says, they complain, he's talking about the disciples seeing someone else doing good works and then going to Jesus and saying, hey, they said they were doing stuff in our name, but they aren't among us. And the Pope said, they complain, the disciples. If he's not one of us, he cannot do good. If he's not of our party, he cannot do good. And Jesus corrects them. Do not hinder him, he says. Let him do good. Pope Francis goes on to explain that the disciples were a little intolerant. That they were closed off from the idea of possessing the truth, convinced that those who do not have the truth cannot do good. This is wrong. Jesus broadens the horizon. The root of this possibility of doing good that we all have is in creation. The Lord created us in His image and His likeness, and we are the image of the Lord, and He does good, and all of this have this commandment at heart. Do good and do not do evil. And then he's quoting people talking back to us. But Father, this is not Catholic. He cannot do good. And the Pope replies, yes, he can. The Lord has redeemed all of us with the blood of Christ. All of us, not just Catholics, everyone. And he mimics what someone might say to him, Father, the atheist, and he responds, even the atheist, everyone, we must meet one another doing good. And again, his critics, he says, would respond, but I don't believe, Father, I'm an atheist. And his response is, but do good, we will meet one another there. Oh, well, this is a very interesting turn of events that the head of the Catholic Church is saying that Christ has redeemed us all, and if you do good, we will meet one another there. Which, that's maybe even a little farther than I would go. Well, I mean, I've said in the past that I would love to believe in universalism. I've just said that. I would love to believe in universalism, and the only reason I don't believe in universalism is because, whoop, I just tooted my own horn. The only reason I don't believe in universalism is because I believe in free will. But anyway, so that's what the Pope said. And then what's interesting is that the Vatican had to clarify. The Vatican came out and clarified later. I'm backing in my garage one moment. And at first, there was a Catholic writer that came out and said, well, the Church has always believed that Christ has redeemed everyone, and that's nothing new. And so, you know, that's good. And that's what the Pope was talking about. He said, maybe we haven't always said it with such exuberance and such joy, but that's okay. You know, this is a new Pope. Well, then after that, the Vatican came out and clarified further and said, the Vatican has clarified that atheists will still go to hell if they reject God. After Pope Francis broke with tradition to deliver a homily stating that non-believers who do good will be redeemed through Jesus, they came out and said, the Vatican spokesman said, that people who know about the Catholic Church cannot be saved if they refuse to enter her. And that is, atheists are still going to hell. So, they did come out and said, that, you know, that there's still hope for the sinful among us, as every man or woman, whatever their situation, can be saved. Even non-Christians can respond to the saving action of the Spirit. No person is excluded from salvation simply because of so-called original sin. So it's just all interesting as all of us wrestle with this thing of what did Jesus do on Calvary and what did Paul mean when he said that Christ, that God in Christ was reconciling, past tense, the world to himself, and he no longer counts men's sins against them. No longer counts men's sins, plural, against them. We're all kind of wrestling with that. And it was just interesting to hear someone who had made it all the way up through the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church sound like he was coming out and saying that Christ's redemptive power is so pervasive and so strong that it reaches out to people. And that in his words, that we just needed to do good. In my words, I personally think that everybody's going to absolutely realize the choice that's ahead of them. And maybe that's going to come in the last few minutes of their life, but I think God is going to give them a choice that they fully understand. And if there are people who are going to hell, which I'd love to be a universalist, but I believe in free will. If there are people who are going to hell, they are going to hell because they absolutely understand the choice in front of them and they absolutely make that decision that they do not want to spend eternity with God. But you know, God's going to work all that out. All I know is that when Christ died, he died for all. Done, finished. And my personal message actually is not that far from what the Pope is talking about when he says do good. My personal message to people is, look, you have everything in your hand right now to make good decisions and create an environment of success with you, with around you and for the people who are around you. And as you do that, you are going to walk on a path where you're going to discover more and more about God, and you're going to be led closer and closer to God. And I firmly believe that as you investigate how to be truly successful in life, that those roads are going to lead straight to Jesus. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Sorry for all the interruptions today. See you, bye.